Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
Somewhere between science and superstition.
We have such sights to show you.
Strange Eons.
Welcome to Strange Eons Radio. That's Eric over there.
Hello.
That's Vanessa over there.
Hello.
I'm Kelly. We're all speaking on brand new microphones, so we may sound awesome or not. Who knows?
See how this goes.
Are we hot or are we not?
Oh, boy.
Oh, that was a bad show.
That was a bad... Wasn't that a website for a while, too?
Like, you could rank TV people? Show. It might have been on MTV or VH1 or something where people would... Strut out and hot or not, and a series of judges. Like, wow.
We were a shallower people at one point, or at least more obvious about how shallow we were.
I'm still pretty shallow.
That's fair.
We just hide it better now as a society.
I just want to let all the listeners know that this is our gala 101st episode.
Glad you got that out up front. It's really good to let them know the context of maybe why we're doing our shows.
I did like Danny Williford saying the surprise twist ending of last episode.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was a little anticlimactic, yeah. I guess
we could have re-recorded that beginning, but, you know, got to keep it real.
That's right. That's right. Hey, also, Happy New Year, guys.
Yeah. Happy 2021.
That's right.
We're living in the future.
This could be a year that doesn't suck, maybe. I'm just going to knock on all the wood. It's fine. Everything's great.
Right. Keep in mind that Mad Max occurs in the year 2021.
That's right.
So here we go.
He really goes through something in that film, too, you know?
Yeah, that's true. This is the first one, then? The first Mad Max?
I believe it's the first Mad Max.
Okay, yeah.
And so it's kind of tracking correctly, if you remember how that...
Especially if you live in Australia.
Oh, jeez. I thought they were doing really well right now. Comparatively, maybe.
They're not on fire this January.
That's true. Yes, they're not currently on fire. And they handled the pandemic well, from what I understand. Or was that New Zealand? I think it was Australia.
Australia did fine. New Zealand's the one that nailed it.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah.
Hey guys, big news was that Cobra Kai season 3 dropped.
True.
And I watched every single episode.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
How was it?
I loved it. Oh. What do you mean, how was it?
I don't know. I haven't watched any Cobra Kai. I keep seeing it advertised, but then don't watch it because I have too many things to watch.
I've three episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
Started watching, going, like, okay, so see where this is going. So far, it's kind of like, all right. But I think it feels like it's all building to something very frigging cool.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. It's very soap opera. You know, it's just a bunch of relationships with karate thrown in the middle of it. I will say this, at the end of the last episode, I did not realize it was the last episode. And I was like, next episode. And they were like, no, ouch. Thank you.
Oh, I hate that. So,
motherfucker.
I did enjoy the almost comedic tongue-in-cheek news reports of the karate gangs. And I thought karate died out in the 80s. So there's some accuracy to that.
I'm here at a school where what can only be described as an all-out karate riot occurred. Yes, karate riot. I loved it, and I hate that I'm going to have to wait a year now for...
That's actually the one thing that bugs me most about releasing all the episodes at once. You know, I do kind of like the... taking 2 months or whatever to watch that new series. By the time it's done, it's, you know, it's 8 months to the next one as opposed to a freaking year.
Yeah.
I agree. On the other hand, we never know what's going to happen. In any given moment, we could all be dead tomorrow.
I'm super glad
that I got to finish the episode season.
That's true. It would suck to have missed the end of The Mandalorian because of that.
That's so true. That is so true. Well, they also put out the newest season of Sabrina.
Yes.
I've only seen a tiny fraction of it because I had to finish the previous season of Sabrina, which I just had such a hard time getting through. But
yeah, I remember you not loving the series.
I'm surprised
you're watching it. I thought you I'm done.
Hey, man, I'm already committed, so I might as well just keep going until further notice. But
all right, okay.
Yeah, I get so frustrated. They're like they're like, oh, this is such a crazy dark show, except she's just Nancy Drew, so that's fine. It's, I just keep waiting for her to like be like really, really evil, and they keep tempting it. They're like, now she's the queen of hell. Now she's split into two. Like, at what point is any of her going to be evil?
I think you're listening to the wrong sources, I guess, because I don't remember anybody going, this is really dark. More like, this is dark, but everybody in it is being silly and fun.
Right.
So cast, situations are dark.
Cast your mind way back when we had this argument, and yeah, it was based on the fact that the comic book is actually very, so yes, dark.
I know. I know. And I think I can't get, that is a big problem for me, but I did genuinely hear like reviews that were like, it's so crazy dark.
Huh.
So I don't know. I'm going to have to pull it back. I'm saying this with no reference points, so it could be fake news in 2021, but
I have no doubt the people that live on a steady diet of Hallmark movies and Avengers being too violent thought it was really, really dark.
Yes.
The world we're coming from generally is going to have a problem of it being the, oh, this is really, really light. She like sauteed children in a pan. Oh, that wasn't so bad.
That's true. I have been like immersing myself in some pretty dark content. Although I will say for 2021 in general, I'm pretty stoked. I just went through various articles about everything that's coming out for Avengers and for Star Wars. Yeah. And just tried to wrap my head around either of them.
So much.
So much content. So I'm stoked.
Yeah, well, what was I going to say about Sabrina? Well, let's keep in mind, it is still aimed at, you know, teens, I think. So it's pretty dark for that. I do enjoy, I'm about halfway through this last season. Mm. And it is the most overtly Lovecraftian of the seasons, for sure.
Oh, does it get Lovecrafty?
And it's a lot more like Creature of the Week or something?
It is a Monster of the Week show this time. But I'm okay with it, especially... They have one of the big evils that shows up is the Weird, which is clearly an acolyte of Cthulhu. And I like that a lot.
Nice. That is fun. I mean, I did enjoy the season finale where like the green takes over for season three. Like that was pretty neat. That had like some really interesting, like if this one particular entity takes over, it can be so bad. Just imagine if any of them take over.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely something I'll look forward to as I rush my way through this series, I'm sure. I like got halfway through the first episode and was like, I'm just going to pause this.
Wow.
I will come back to it. I just, you know.
Do you see anything that you wanted to talk about, Eric?
I was still doing the 2020 deep dive. I mean, I did watch, what was it? Perfect Trip or some shit like that, which Steve Zahn and the guy from Justified, Timothy Oliphant, and
this is the one about the LSD or something like that, right?
No, they go on a honeymoon in Hawaii. And it's like, ooh, which two people are the killers that were recently seen in such and such a place kind of movie, directed by the guy who did Pitch Black and a few other things.
Oh.
Hmm.
So I'm reading all that going, this should be really good. And it's really okay.
That's almost worse.
Yeah.
Than bad.
Especially when you've got Oliphant and Steve Zahn, all those guys who just do good stuff, even when they're in a silly shit. Perfect Getaway.
Mm.
And what's her name? Who kills all the Resident Evil zombies. She was the lead lady in it.
Is that Mia? No, yeah, not Mia.
No.
Somebody.
Oh.
Famous model who turned actor.
Uma. No, not Uma. Yes.
Mila Jovovich. Mila.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it's a pretty damn good cast. Pretty solid director. And he's written decent because I think he wrote Pitch Black as well. And like, oh, this should be fun. And then it's fine. It's just... It's fine.
Well, with Mila and Timothy, at least you got some fine-looking specimens of humanity to look at.
And apparently Steve decided he needed to jack him. So he's like, I'm going to be working opposite Timothy Oliphant. So he is beefed in this one. Right. It's like, Jesus, his arms got huge.
Everybody wearing bathing suits, I imagine, for...
At various times, yes.
Okay, well, so we're going to jump into this episode's topic, and we're going to do it a little differently because we are talking about our top five films each for 2020. And then after we get done with that, we'll jump into our runner-ups or other films that we liked. We just didn't want to do those things first and then end with our topic because we might. Nobody knows what we have picked for our top five.
It's true. That's right. I'm so curious what you guys have chosen.
I imagine there will be some crossover.
I would think so.
No. Oh, okay. We have such different tastes.
Well, I know that the Phineas and Ferb stuff didn't make it to my list.
Yeah, sorry.
Hey, that was like a topic. It's not in my top five. I don't think they even make that show anymore. I think it got canceled like 5 years ago.
Okay, wow. Okay, very defensive.
Like, have anything in 2020.
I just want you to know that I have other tastes too.
I think we figured that out, yes.
Well, Eric, you want to start us off with...
Sure, my number five.
Number five.
Ooh.
Casey Kasem in here. Aged myself horribly on that one, didn't I? Anyways, not that anybody that much younger. Anyways, god damn it. Start up, dumb shit. Get Duked.
Oh.
In my number five slot.
Get Duked.
Not on my list at all.
I don't know if I saw this.
I did not see it.
I did mention it on one of our podcasts before after I saw it. It's the one with the bunch of kids in Ireland who get in trouble and have to go on a survival retreat.
That's right.
Yeah. Hunted by local people who call themselves the monarchy of the area.
Right.
Right. You know what? I do remember that popping up on a couple of best of 2020 lists. Where is it? Where is it you can catch it? Is it on Amazon?
Yeah, I think it's Amazon. Okay. I don't think it's Shudder. It's probably Amazon or Hulu. Mm-hmm. Anyways, but it's a... Yeah, it did all right. 87-65 from the Rotten Tomato critics and crowd. So it did fine. But I here's how I put my list together. I went through my Letterboxd reviews and wrote down all the ones that, like, even if the review might have been like something was a 3-star and something I gave 4-star, if I remembered that 3-star better, like, you know what? I obviously enjoyed this movie more.
Interesting.
So I pulled all of the ones that really stuck with me and then just started whittling down. So yeah. I honestly am a little surprised at some of the stuff that ended up on my list. So
wow. Like,
and this was one that I knew I really liked, and I'm not surprised it ended up because it's so much fun to watch.
What was the plot of the film again?
A bunch of kids in trouble, kind of a Scared Straight sort of thing, except they're going to go out into the wilderness of Ireland, which, you know, not the same as going to the wilderness of the Northwest, but they had to get from point A to point B, meet up with their teacher or whatever he's called, and then take another trek.
But there's something that happens.
Yeah, there's a group of people that I don't know if they own the land or squatters, but called themselves the monarchy of the land, and they look at these kids as invaders, so they're going to make sure they scare them off from their area or kill them for being on their land illegally.
Man, wow. That's hilarious. So I know in British culture, there's this really funny thing where in America, we have like the Boy Scouts.
Right.
And in there, they have something called something guides or the something. Anyway, and instead of like going out in the wilderness and like learning to like start a fire or whatever, they do these like long walks. And like countryside walks, and there are these trails that go up and down the entire country. But and legally, at least in England, you have to be able to go through land because it's all technically owned by the Queen or something. So sure. You're supposed to be able to trek through farmyards and stuff. But yeah, people get really pissy about it too because they're like, "I'm a millionaire, get off my property, you filthy walkers,
peasants."
That's right, exactly. So that's my number five.
I'm putting that on my list if it made your number five.
Yeah, same. Good. Definitely same. So my number five, this was such a struggle trying to figure out what to make it on that bottom slot of the list.
Sure.
Just because, there were like so many that kind of affect you in a different way, but equally so. So my number five, up until about 2 minutes ago, I was still debating it. So, but I'm going to go with it. Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. So either of you have this on your list?
Not on my list, but I did like it a lot.
So my list, I just want to caveat it by saying I really skewed it towards feel good. Like, a lot of my films are going to be about me feeling good or making people feel good because this it was a fucking year.
I have a couple of those, too.
Yeah. So Bill and Ted Face the Music, it was just such a happy, fun film. I felt so good after seeing that movie. And same writers as previously, they managed to get, of course, Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter. The two daughters are excellent.
They managed to get Keanu Reeves. I'm sure Alex Winter was just waiting for Keanu to say yes.
Alex Winter has a fine directing career currently. Alex Winter is doing really well. But yeah, definitely, like, just the fact that that it happened at all. And I know that they've been struggling for a long time to make it. So it really felt lovingly crafted. And yeah, it just, yeah. Made me feel good.
I thought that they both fell into those roles pretty easily again.
They did.
And I believe that I had a really good time with that film.
It's great, too, because, Keanu post John Wick. It's almost like, oh, hey, that's right. Keanu Reeves exists and he's kind of awesome. And we're like in such a, is it a Keanu sense? A Reeves sense? And, it's really nice to see him be willing to walk back into something that basically defined him as a stupid guy who couldn't act for most of his career. But he just was like, I'll do it. I don't mind.
Nice.
Makes people happy.
Well, it'll come as no surprise to you guys that I cheated for my number one.
No. If I didn't cheat, you can't cheat.
But it still, I think, I'll argue it. It still works. Mine is a documentary.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Yeah, my number five is Leap of Faith, William Friedkin on The Exorcist.
That's awesome. Yeah. You did love that film.
I loved it. And not just me. The Rotten Tomatoes critics have it at 91%. Audience has it at 89%. Yeah, it was written and directed by Alexandre O'Philippe. And here's why this guy is so good at this. He also did 7852, Hitchcock's shower scene.
Oh.
He also did The People versus George Lucas.
Oh, shit.
He also did Memory, The Origins of Alien. And he also did The Dock of the Dead. So no wonder I loved this so much. I love all of his documentaries.
Yeah, no kidding. Those are great.
This is starring and narrated by William Friedkin. And it's described as a lyrical and spiritual cinematic essay on The Exorcist, exploring the depths of William Friedkin's mind's eye, the nuances of his filmmaking process, and the mysteries of faith and fate that have shaped his life and filmography, which is super snooty because what it really is a masterclass in cinema. If you can't handle egomaniacs discussing themselves, this is probably not for you, but I would argue that Friedkin has the body of work to back up his braggadocious ways.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with his ego just because, if he was 30,
right,
he had an ego like that, it might be a little different, but he's been successfully making pretty damn good movies for several decades. Go ahead and have a weird ego.
is available on Shudder too, so.
And he's not shooting guns anymore on set, right?
I think he actually mentions, I'd never do that nowadays.
So really, it's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah, that and punching one of the priest who wasn't an actor.
Who wasn't even an actor.
Oh my God.
You do need to watch this.
I do.
As a filmmaker, even more so, I think it's interesting if you love film, but if you've ever been on a set and you've ever done film stuff, even bigger.
Well, it's so funny because like the other documentaries that you mentioned that he was behind, like the People versus George Lucas, has been on my list forever.
Oh my God, that's so good.
So, and I already know a fair amount about George Lucas, but I want the extra ammunition. So I gotta see this.
Yeah, you should. It's really good. And while you're at it, go out and seek the short film, George Lucas in Love. it's awesome.
Okay, cool. Then I will. Every time, I know that you are a lover of short films, and you are a great curator of short films. But for me, as soon as you say short films, like a light goes off in my head, and everyone starts running around. The ship is sinking! Emergency! Get out, get out, get out!
All right. Well, on that note, something that is definitely not a short film, my number four pick, the feel-good movie of the year, Relic.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I still haven't seen this.
Same. Yeah.
This is an interesting one. This actually was the one that made me go, yeah, I think we're going to get the Rotten Tomatoes for each of these. Because the critics have it at 91. Oh. The crowd has it at 48.
Whoa, that is a disparity.
Damn. Is it a slow burn? Is it deliberately paced?
It is to a point a slow burn, but nothing compared to like The Lodge, which everybody seemed to love.
Why do people like The Lodge?
I don't know, bored the crap out of me, man.
I hate that book. Anyway, God, it's going to be like your number one.
Number four on my list, The Lodge.
But if you can argue it's good, we will listen. Relic is, it's got a gigantic tone shift from how it starts to a very strange switch in the end that I went with and thought, oh, wow, what an inventive, crazy way to deal with what's going on in this movie. It's also very dark. It's very mean in a lot of ways because it's got I mentioned this too much. A fairly accurate portrayal of dementia and what the family goes through. And what a lot of things also often forget on dementia is the anger and the other strange shit that goes on. And they nail a lot of it. And then they do it really well, and they don't do it as an insult. But man, when it changes to the second half and to where the daughters, I think, start getting in danger, it's a very strange shift. One review I read kind of compared it to House of Leaves, which I thought, oh, okay, interesting. Hmm. That is, I believe that's Netflix.
Is it scary?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's got a good, dread would be a better word.
Okay.
It's got more of a dread, but then it's got some really good weird suspense stuff.
And it's supernatural horror, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yep.
It's interesting because I think, and we talked about this before, but any horror film that really focuses on something that the filmmakers, especially if the filmmakers know, so if they've clearly been through the process of dealing with somebody who has dementia and then incorporate that into a film, probably therapeutically, like that's so freaking cool. Yeah. Like it's nice for people who have also experienced it to see and just be like, oh, you didn't just half-ass this or guess as to like how this, like there are so many films out there where people just get cancer. And I'm like, I really personally for a long time felt like I really could not possibly talk about cancer because I'm like, I don't know anybody who's undergone. And now I do, you know, life goes on. But it's so nice when it feels so authentic and I think it can pull off
a lot more. Does, yeah. Yeah, this and the taking of Deborah Logan probably are the most that I've seen, the most accurate.
Yeah.
So, but Relic, it is, right. You know, I said I picked a lot of feel good movies. Not all.
Clearly. Well, I'll jump into my number four, which actually kind of mirrors your critic, it mirrors your audience, I guess. 47% for the critics, 60% audience, and that is Underwater.
Ah,
very nice. This was very close to making my list.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, it was just really, I don't know, it was such a fun action film. And it probably is higher on my list also because I saw it in theaters before.
It's your last good memory.
It's up there. I see a lot of films on my own, and I remember the theater was pretty empty, and it was one of the last days that it was still in theaters, and I know the pandemic had been mentioned, and I was like, I gotta, like, get in and see this movie before it's too late. It was just, I liked the surprise moments, and I liked, for the most part, the cast was great, just... Yeah, moved along very nicely, very disastrous.
Remind me what the Rotten Tomatoes on this is.
Audience is 60%, critics 47.
Well, what did they want out of this movie?
I don't know.
Bunch of no fun having stupid critics, I guess.
Right?
This movie takes about 40 seconds to get going. And then it's just nonstop. I loved it.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a stupid movie. I think like everything that happens, it feels like it escalates appropriately. I don't know. I don't know what there is to... What do they say about this? It's a strong cast and stylish direction aren't enough to distract from the strong sense of deja vu provoked by this claustrophobic thriller's derivative story.
Okay, fine.
It's too much like other movies you love.
I know. Like, we're at an age now where it's going to be pretty darn hard to pull off something new unless it's about, like, Twitch streaming.
And let's face it, they've got to be comparing it to the Alien movies.
Of course.
And this is the best Alien movie since Aliens.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like, you know, we've had great Alien movies and this one is sucky.
And it's like, I mean, you could argue it's Alien meets Abyss, but it's not tonally either of those films. It's its own film. It's an action movie. I mean, Aliens is too, but it feels more adrenaline driven and disastrous mixed in with those elements. So I don't know. I'm just,
I always find that excuse for a movie being bad going, it's like, you actually kind of really respected or liked this movie in some way, but you felt you needed to show how, well, you know, this is just like, it's like, yeah, that and probably 40 other films
totally.
That you come up with. A bunch of people in trouble running away.
Hey, man, Kristen Stewart has no hair and axe. This is thrilling to me.
That's right. Right up there with the Avatar thing. It's just like Dances with Wolves. Yeah, Dances with Wolves was like about 400 other Westerns you haven't seen. So
yeah, Mandalorian is Lone Wolf and Cub, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
So we just have to know that, hey, if it references something or borrows from something, so what? If it's enjoyable, what does it matter? It
worked for Quentin Tarantino.
Not only that, a big critique of the film I saw was that there was no character development. And I thought that the filmmakers got around that by casting people that you kind of understood.
Yeah.
So when TJ Tranchell shows up in a role, I actually know what his character is going
immediately.
To be. So I don't need development.
Yep.
No, and all you want to do is see how those people act in these situations they're thrown in.
The thing that comes up a lot with indie films that it gets submitted, it's like, oh, we spend a lot of time on character development. People sitting around a campground talking about various shit is not character development.
Yeah.
I think Underwater had good character development because it showed them reacting in real time to what was really going on.
Right.
And I don't need to know that they were born in Oklahoma for that to be part of their character.
And as they go from space to space, I seem to remember like more clues are unveiled about what happened, who different people are. I don't know. Like, I definitely felt like there was, maybe the characters weren't changing as the action happened, but our understanding of them certainly was.
Yeah.
And more power to the director as well, which I just want to mention, William Eubank, who did The Signal, Love, and was mostly a cinematographer. I mean, that's been his main shtick for a long time. So great eye, and he's trying. He's trying things. Yeah. The Signal was like a interesting film. So it had a lot of weird moments, but like, man, like that was a lot of effort behind an indie piece. So,
yeah, I've changed my mind. That's now my number one. So let's stop talking about it. We'll come back.
We'll just find more to mention about Underwater.
Until then, my number four was The Dark and the Wicked. Did that make anybody else's list?
No.
It's one of those years, man.
Yeah. A budget that I could not find, but a box office of $414,000 somehow. Rotten Tomatoes. Critics have it at 90%. Audience has it at 62%. It was written and directed by Brian Bertino, who wrote and directed The Strangers, which, you know, I hate.
Oh, yeah.
The Black Coat's Daughter, which I think is pretty dang good.
Yeah. Scary.
And The Monster, which is the young girl and her mom on the stuck on the road with the monster surrounding their car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this guy has done a good job of these kind of movies. Stars Maren Ireland, who has 68 credits, most notably Sissy in The Umbrella Academy, and will be playing Nora in the upcoming Why the Last Man series. Did you guys ever read Why the Last Man?
Oh my God, yes. That was one of my first graphic novels.
Is that like a HBO adaptation or something?
I don't know,
or?
But it has 8 episodes listed on IMDb, so I was
like,
what? Yay! Also stars Michael Abbott Jr., who has a ton of short films and a couple episodes of Fear of the Walking Dead and the upcoming Hell House remake.
Oh, man. Okay.
And this is about a brother and a sister who are called back to their family farm because their father is on his deathbed. It goes from that lovely, happy premise to very much worse as mom kills herself that night and a series of very scary events and visions start happening. Basically, for some reason, there's a demon that is waiting for their father's soul, and it is tormenting everyone as it waits. This thing, have you seen this, Vanessa?
No.
It is so scary.
It's really good.
It's got a couple of moments, there's a shot where the guy looks outside and he sees his dead mom floating out there.
Ooh.
And
I just got shivers thinking about that.
It raised the hair on my arm. It's got amazing sound design. It has relentless scares. And I loved every dread-filled second of it. I know Eric had a complaint that there was nothing to break
dread. It's just one of my strange little things. But it didn't hurt the film. It's still a great damn movie. But,
For whatever reason, it really stuck with me. So that is The Dark and the Wicked. It is only available as a rental still.
Wow.
Worth it, though.
Yeah, it was like $2.99. It's not a $15 rental.
Yeah, exactly. Like, a lot of these, you know, I paid for in some way or another.
All right. So my number three, I guess, would be... was one I know you've talked about. I don't think you liked it nearly as much as I did, but was Spontaneous.
That's on my list.
Higher than three?
Yep.
All right. Let's head on over to... We'll give you your number three and we'll come back to Spontaneous when
okay, awesome. Get to my number three is Freaky.
Oh, fun.
Nice choice. That was one that... It didn't make my list, but it balanced going, right. Oh, damn it.
Again, just one that I just had a lot of fun watching. The cast clearly had a lot of fun making this film. Vince Vaughn basically pulling off a Jack Black. I'm, of course, referencing Jack Black in Jumanji, where he plays a teenage girl, much like Vince Vaughn in this movie playing a teenage girl. And not even a popular teenage girl, like an outsider teenage girl. That's not an easy, like, pull. That's not a, like, hey, I need you to play a teenage girl, but here's her actual character in depth. So
especially when he looks like he's like 7'5" or something.
I know, right?
He's so huge looking.
He's enormous, absolutely enormous. The director is Christopher Landon, who wrote Freaky as well, and Happy Death Day, Paranormal Activity 2, and started off with like Disturbia. The stars in this. The main girl, Catherine Newton, I was trying to figure out where I'd seen her before. She was in Pokemon. Do you guys remember her in Pokemon?
No.
She's the girl.
She was the like lead? That
Detective Pikachu.
I didn't watch.
Oh, well, you know what? It was fun.
I mean, I tried based on your suggestion.
I think we have to have an understanding between us that sometimes I enjoy children's content.
We have an understanding, Vanessa.
She's also in Three Billboards, and she's going to play Cassie Lang in the new Ant-Man. So,
wow.
Yeah. But she was just a super fun character to watch and as well. Just, I don't know. It was a great dynamic to see a young girl owning Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, super fun. I didn't realize that was the same guy that did Happy Death Day, that wrote Happy Death Day also. So.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of crossover, actually, in my selections, which is going to be interesting to check out. But I will say it's interesting. I don't know how they're figuring out the Rotten Tomatoes and audience scores for these, but this one's sat at like 83% critic, 80% audience. But how do they know?
No, the audience is just the people who will waste time writing a review on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, that's the only way they get the audience?
Yeah. And then the critics is in, what do you call it, an aggregation of all the critic reviews.
Oh.
And if you basically say, I like the film and I give it a D, that's a positive.
Is this the thing? Do people actually go on to Rotten Tomatoes and review stuff?
Oh my God. Don't remember The Last Jedi?
Yeah, man.
No, I do not.
Change the way they
did it.
Run their critics because so many, if you would go through it, you'd read the same, because it was so hated by fanboys. You'd read the same stupid review like every four reviews.
Oh, man.
The exact same thing where somebody was just going in. It was just bad.
Wow. I mean, I would think, why don't you get the data from IMDb and Letterboxd and, you know.
Eric and I have talked many times about how much we actually hate Rotten Tomatoes, and we don't think that it's anything we should be basing any of your decisions on, but that it made for a good gimmick in what we talk about for movies. And that's the only reason we talk about it.
I know. Well, I never follow it, but I do like how it summarizes up in one sentence, like, thousands of pieces of information.
Yeah, it does that. Like Metacritic kind of does the same thing. I just think the Rotten Tomatoes one is, it's more known, so let's talk about it. And it's just an aggregation site, folks.
Well, thank you for the lesson, guys. I really appreciate it.
Okay, we'll get into my number three, and then how about after this we take a little break?
Sounds good to me.
And that's all dependent on this not being somewhere higher on anybody's list. Mm-hmm. I've got The Hunt.
Nope.
Also floated around my top five for a while, but didn't quite make it.
Budget of $14 million, box office of $11 million because it opened the weekend that everything shut down, so they almost had a great weekend. Yep. It actually made $5 million of that just as the theaters closed.
Wow.
Rotten Tomatoes critics have it at 57%. Audience has it as 66, which I think is a little low. You guys both saw this. I think you liked this.
I mean, I can't believe it's number three for you.
Oh, I loved this movie.
Really?
I could see where the kind of person that would go onto Rotten Tomatoes and write a review would get the wrong mindset, and they'd focus on, well, this made fun of me, you know.
Yeah, but it makes fun of everybody.
And ignore,
this is why I love good. It.
And ignore and miss the fact that it's also making fun of everybody else.
Oh my God, the liberals take a tough hit in this. For sure.
Directed by Craig Zobel, who has done episodes of Outcast, American Gods, and Westworld. Written by Nick Koos, who is the writer and producer on HBO's Watchmen. And Damon Lindelof, who you would know from Lost, Prometheus, Star Trek Into Darkness, World War Z, and 8 episodes of Watchmen. He basically show ran that episode, wrote every episode.
Yeah.
It stars Betty Gilpin, who is a national treasure. 38 credits, but I only know her from the show Glow. I love her in that show.
She is so good in it.
Yes. And Hilary Swank from Boys Don't Cry, Million Dollar Baby, and The Next Karate Kid.
Yeah, there you go.
Lest we forget.
Right. It is a movie. It starts with a bunch of strangers waking up in a clearing. They don't know where they are, how they got there. And then it turns into Most Dangerous Game. And maybe this is why I like it, because that's one of my favorite types of story.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
And this might be my favorite execution of it, right next to last year's Ready or Not, which was also a Most Dangerous Game story.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bunch of elitist liberal assholes who have grabbed together a bunch of horrible conservative online people who are posting shitty things, and they've decided to hunt them, but they might have accidentally picked the wrong person with one of them.
Yeah.
And it does have biting commentary, because you hate everybody in this, both sides.
Yeah.
And then when the kind of twist comes and you realize what's really going on, you're like, oh my God, I can almost see this happening based on the way we all jump to conclusions so easily.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to admit, as somebody who listens to a hell of a lot of NPR, I had a moment watching this where I was like, I feel really dirty and bad about myself right now. But I want to be educated.
I thought it was funny. I thought it was surprisingly gory. They did a couple of little twists at the beginning that I like where you bring in a actor you recognize and you go, oh, there's the hero of the show, and boom, he's out.
Nope. Part of what made me really want to see it was the initial reaction before it even came out. You had, I think it was Tucker Carlson who lost his shit about it. And then
I think it was no less than Trump who lost his shit about it.
And yeah. And then, and it just climbed up, and whoever you want to pick, there was somebody, I don't think it was Matt, but it was somebody like that who lost their shit on the left about it. It was like, oh, well, this is something I see.
Well, and the conservatives who were losing their shit over it didn't seem to get that they should have been saying, yes, this is what we've been saying forever.
Yeah.
They want to hunt us and kill us. Instead, they were like, this is a movie about liberals hunting and killing conservatives. Well, it's not actually, but okay.
Which is funny, because that's what liberals said too. I didn't want to watch it forever, because I was like, oh, this is a movie put out by conservatives about how shitty we are.
Well,
because that was the impression I got.
Yeah,
from
you
got
to step
no
out
research
a little bit and realize that's not going to happen in a Hollywood film.
I mean,
that's
you're talking about the guy who created Watchmen, which took rafts of shit for being too liberal.
I know. Well, I honestly didn't do any research, and I did watch it. So,
all right. Yeah, I loved it. Number three for me. Still not available anywhere. Well, maybe it might be on HBO Max, but I don't think so.
I think it's on HBO or Showtime or something like that.
Because if it is, I'm watching it again.
I definitely got it via Netflix disc in mail. Ah. So.
Wow.
The people at Netflix are like, we really want to discontinue this service, but there's still one person who's using it.
My mom.
I guess we got to keep it going.
Definitely my mom. She's that. She's
your mom
that
wanted to see The Hunt?
My mom, no. My mom has been forced to get my list of things when I have run out of Hallmark movies to order for her.
Does your mom have an AOL email address?
Thankfully, no, but it is a Hotmail.
Okay. Well, uh-huh. Better. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, guys, why don't we take a little bit of break, and we will come back. We'll discuss our last two films, and then we'll get into our runner-ups for the year.
Oh, no. I'll do it. What gives?
You want to do it?
Just wait till you see what I've got.
It's the Wonder Boner.
The Wonder Boner?
You laugh now. Just watch. You just assemble the Wonder Boner stainless steel rods like this. Take the fish, find the top of the spine, sliding through the ring on the Wonder Boner, and... voila! The Wonder Boner. My wife would like that.
Introducing the Wonder Boner, the amazing new fishing tool that makes deboning fish a breeze. The Wonder Boner's unique design removes the bones from trout, char, and whitefish. Simply connect the appropriate size stainless steel rods, start the spine through the ring, and push the fish through. It's that easy. And the Wonder Boner comes with a polyethylene storage case that doubles as a base and a cutting board. Why go through the hassle of deboning a fish the old-fashioned way when the Wonder Boner makes deboning fish this easy?
Well, I think the Wonder Boner is a winner. So, Dave, where did you get the Wonder Boner? Funny you should ask.
We are back. Hey, guys, it's kind of weird. We've had no crossover yet.
One.
I'm, oh, well, yes, that's one right. So far.
Not one that counted. I mean, nobody crossed over with me.
That's true. That is true. And I think I know at least one of your next two that is not on my list. So. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Too. Well, Eric, I think you're going next.
I'm pretty sure this won't be a crossover for anyone. This is another one that I don't even know if either of you have watched yet either, but Swallow.
I still have not seen it for sure. Yeah,
liked it so much, it made your top
number
five.
Two.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, just hell of a film, hell of a character study film. Again, like I said, when I talked about it before, it's borderline horror. You're pushing to call this horror, but that's how they market it. So screw it. I'm going with them. But so I've talked about this one a bunch. So I won't say too much, but it was a 88 critics, 72 crowd, so fairly highly rated. Now, this one I would classify as a slow burn, but it is far more of a character study than it is a people attacking each other kind of thing or anything like that. It's all about what the lead goes through, what she goes through as a newlywed and controlled by this asshole guy and this awful, awful family, and the weird way she comes to deal with it by swallowing stuff, you know, her ability, her way to control her world becomes very apparent to her. Mm. And I just thought it was incredibly well acted, really well directed. The art direction is also way off the chart, especially when you realize the guy wanted to emulate Hitchcock in the way things look, not necessarily in the movie, but the way it looked. Yep.
I remember thinking that just viewing the trailer. Mm-hmm. I was like, this looks like a movie that was made in 1968.
Yes. Yeah, it does. And it maintains that through the film. So, So yeah, like I say, if you really want to hear me blab incessantly about this, check up our episode on eating things or...
freaky food, I believe.
Yeah, it's fairly recent. Yeah. It was only a few weeks back, but I talk about it much more. But yeah, left a hell of an impression on me. Swallow.
You're really into the character development stories.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. No, I'm definitely impressed with it and excited to check it out at some point when I want to feel bad. In the meantime, my number two is also something that I talked about in depth previously, which is a Kelly recommendation, Love and Monsters.
Oh, nice.
This was right there at the top. And I was like, oh, I'm going to have to let this one go. I loved that movie.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't quite make it onto your list at all. No, yeah. This movie was just so, again, I don't know if in a normal year it would have been in my top five, but this year it was freaking in my top five.
Well, you weren't kidding if you're looking for feel good.
Yes.
Yes.
This movie was all of that.
Yep. And the critics agree with 92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
That just makes me angry that it didn't get to theaters because I want everybody involved in this to become big stars.
Well, and the director, Michael Matthews, he hasn't done a lot too. So I'm hoping that, post-COVID, he's going to be recognized because he'd only really done Sweetheart and Five Finger Marseille, which I know I'd mentioned before. But
so he directed Sweetheart?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember that one?
I do.
I
didn't like it.
Yeah.
But this movie is great.
Moved significantly.
Yeah.
Script helps.
He learned. Yes, exactly. Having a really solid script. I don't know. It almost feels like an Edgar Wright movie in places.
Absolutely.
Very much. Yes.
Yeah. So they're just such a well-written, well-acted piece with fun monsters. Oh my God, that world is so much fun to live in. And the thing that I don't like about certain movies like The Purge is that they establish this really neat universe that we don't get to see a lot of. And Love and Monsters is like, nope, we're going. We're going and you get to see all kinds of critters and all kinds of different situations. And that was just really neat.
Well, in line with the Lord of the Rings haters. It's just about a guy walking, man.
Yeah, that's true. And he writes in his little book, he makes his little journal entries about the monsters on the way. And there's love and there's monsters. It's in the title.
Right. It delivers what it promises.
It sure does.
It also reminded me of my youth, middle school and early high school, playing like role-playing games. This felt like a world that, you would want to play a role-playing game based in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the monster encounters are frequent enough, but you still have time for adventure on the edge. When he pulled out his notebook to kind of start to write down these monsters, I actually had a strong moment of, oh my God, that's such a cool idea. Because it is just a D&D book. And
a monster manual.
Yeah, monster manual.
In a perfect world, this would have become a huge hit and that book would have been available market for all of us to pick up.
I would have bought it.
Me too.
I would have bought edition 1 and 2.
Nice. Okay, so that was your number 2.
Absolutely.
I could have cheated again. Because my number 2 and my number 1 are interchangeable, and I thought, I'll just make these a tie so I can slip another movie in, but I didn't. But I wonder if this is making your guys' list then.
Yeah, I
think
don't
know. It can. Possessor Uncut is my number 2.
It did not quite make my list.
Same for me. It was definitely in that. If we were doing a top 10, it would be there.
If it was not 2020, it would have probably made it in my list, but it is a 2020 year. So
this hit me right in the sweet spot of what I wish that a new David Cronenberg film would have been.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I couldn't find any budget stuff on it, but the box office was $895,000. Again, somehow. I don't know if
Australia.
Able to do,
must be Australia.
Or in the London, 3 weeks where films were open somewhere.
Yeah, London opened for like a hot second and then closed back down. So everybody went to the theaters for like a couple weeks and then,
So the critics for Rotten Tomato have this at 93%, which is pretty good for a horror film.
Yeah.
And the audience has it at 59%. And I'm guessing it's just a little too cerebral. There's too much thinking and wondering what's actually going on. Because there is a lot of that in this where you're like, what's going on?
Why?
Written and directed by Brandon Cronenberg, who had done Antiviral. Brandon Cronenberg, of course, produced by David Cronenberg.
you don't say.
It stars Andrea Riseborough from Oblivion, Birdman, Nocturnal Animals, and probably most recognizable from Mandy. And Jennifer Jason Leigh from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, The Hitcher, Annihilation, Lisey's Story, I guess it's called, which is a Stephen King adaptation. And I was cool. I like this book. Who's she playing in that? When I look on IMDb, they've got the list of actors and then the character they're playing.
Yeah.
It's got the list of actors and the characters they're playing when it comes to Jennifer Jason Leigh, no character name. It's just a blank line.
Oh, like,
What is this all about?
Mystery for another time.
Yes. Riseborough plays an agent who works for some kind of secretive organization that uses this bizarre brain implant technology to inhabit other people's bodies, and then ultimately driving those people to commit assassinations for high-paying clients. Because this is a horror film, she begins to lose control and finds herself trapped in the mind of a man whose willpower is much stronger than her own. This is just a weird fucking movie. Yeah, it feels like it should have been made in 1977 or 8.
Yeah.
It's such a strange idea. Some really strong performances, some shocking gore when it shows up. I don't know that it's a gory movie, but when it decides to be, it certainly is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't want the son. Look, if Steven Spielberg's son comes out and he makes a movie that's just like E.T. or something, that's kind of like the last thing you really want.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize how badly I wanted Brandon to make a David Cronenberg film.
I mean, Cronenberg left a gaping hole one has properly filled it.
He was his own filmmaker. It's nice to have somebody.
Canada financed that man and no one else would have.
Yeah.
And thank goodness for that, because we have some real interesting content because of it. But
Cronenberg doesn't even make Cronenberg movies
anymore.
Right,
exactly. Yeah.
So,
he's gone legit, as it were.
And he acts.
So this was just so refreshing. I loved this movie.
Does it remind you at all in places of Under the Skin?
Under the Skin, I'm trying to remember. Oh,
Scarlett Johansson.
But yeah, I did not like that movie.
Really?
So.
Yeah, no, I didn't much either.
It's just like, I think just in those moments where you go into the weird mental state where maybe it's inside of a spaceship, it's hard to tell. And it's that black room with the black oily, you know, and the person is being overtaken by her and there's this kind of interesting exchange.
You know, now that you mention it, I think this would probably make a great double feature with that, because it feels like they should both be playing on a drive-in in 1977.
Oh my God, that'd be so much fun. Oh my God, somebody really, we got to keep doing drive-ins. I don't know where, like, there was a little surge in the summer, and where are they now? I need them.
You generally don't run in the winter.
I don't care. Make them run in the winter.
Right here.
I'll put on my windshield wipers. It'll be fine.
Well, that was my number two. I mean, by process of elimination, your number ones have to be the same thing you're talking about, don't they?
No.
Oh, no.
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Because mine was number... I know what your number one is.
Yep, you know what mine is.
But no, my number one was Anything for Jackson.
Wow.
I love this movie.
Whoa.
One just totally took me by surprise, because I was doing that list of, here's a 2020 movie. I think it's on Shudder. So I was like, well, watch this. Heard nothing about it.
Yeah.
Didn't see a trailer, commercial for it or anything. Like, blown away by it.
Yeah.
It was a 98.73 for critics and crowd, so fairly highly reviewed. Directed by, I don't know if it's Justin G. Dyke or Justin G. Dick, but D-Y-C-K, not just as you see necessary. But here's some of his other films.
Ooh.
A Christmas Exchange, A Christmas in the Rockies, Love in Harmony Valley, Pony Sitters Club.
Wow.
Baby in a Manger.
This Christmas. Guy's been brewing.
He's got like 30 some odd credits, and every one of them looks like they're from the Hallmark Channel, except this one.
Yes.
And something in this guy said, I have to direct a horror film, and he nailed it.
Did he write this one also, or?
I don't know.
That would be interesting if he's just been making all these Hallmark movies going, I can't wait to make my really crazy horror film.
That was the pitch to me.
He was the writer too. Story. He didn't write. Looks like he was a story writer, but didn't write the script.
I'll say this. The relationship between the adults feels so real that I'm sure that's all honed on years of Hallmark Channel movies.
Yep, exactly. And that's part of why I think it works so well. Is the love and caring between the husband and the... You absolutely believe these people will do anything for Jackson.
Yeah.
Because they are so connected to each other. And the side characters are all great. And they're not... One or two of them... Sounds like a beer. It's Kelly, so I know it's not... But sounds like... in a lot of movies would be cliche characters. I think they're given a fair amount of depth, even if they're just barely on the screen, like the guy who constantly wants to shovel their yard.
Yeah.
Has this solid group of scenes. Mm-hmm. And the acting is all top notch. The effects are top notch. And the ideas and the execution are wonderfully, like we were talking about original earlier. Yeah, you've seen shit like this before, mm-hmm. but you really haven't seen it done like this.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. And it just nailed me when I watch it going, I love this movie, man.
I will say the ghosts in it were very effective.
Oh, geez. Yeah, it doesn't have a lot of scares, but the ones it does are there.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, like exactly, they aren't. And after a while, it's like not as scary, but then you get a new one and it's like, oh my God, what the hell is happening right now?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. It didn't make my list, but I can totally see why it would be at the top of yours.
Really, really well written, brilliantly cast, because what he's asking you to do is root for the bad guys, and you absolutely root for the bad guys the entire time
they're
accidental bad guys.
You're right. Yep. Yeah.
So they don't really want to be doing this. They just don't feel like they've got another choice.
Yeah.
And it does that very rare thing really well, where I was talking about before with the way too serious all the time. If this had been a flat out serious film, it wouldn't work at all.
No.
But since it's got that wonderful give and take of humor and weirdness, and these people know what they're doing, these people have no idea what they're doing, it goes back and forth so well. I just think it's an incredibly well executed film.
The humor is all based in, I mean, if you can imagine, if you found out your grandma was a practicing Satanist, but she had just started, that's just funny, you know?
Yeah, they're little meetups with the other people who are also part of this. So good. Yeah. So
and
good.
The one lady's like, this is just something I do for fun. Right. I don't know.
It reminded me so much of the one time that we did our podcast in the community library. Oh, yeah. And I was like, you can borrow these rooms for anything.
Good point. Yep. So that was my 2020 number one. Well, I think I know what yours might be.
Weirdly enough, you probably do. Much like you, this came to my list late in the game. It was while I was trying to fit in some more 2020 titles and just see what was out there that I'd missed. And I'm so glad I did. My number one is Spontaneous, to no one's surprise.
So good. What I had that was three for me.
It's it affected me pretty deeply. I think much like Relic did for you, this one touched on some personal topics for me, like losing a parent and then seeing people around you disappear was really just, I cried. I definitely cried. And I think critics agree, 98%. Audience is slightly less so, 72%. The director for this actually also was the writer for Underwater, Love and Monsters, Divergent, Babysitter.
Yeah, he had a good year.
Good grief.
Yeah. Good going, Brian Duffield.
Yeah, man.
Way to go, dude. You rocked it. I really enjoyed the cast. I think Catherine Langford, who you might remember from Knives Out and maybe Love, Simon. Yeah. She was in 13 Reasons Why. She just really, I don't know. She was very effective as the like fun, controlled, out of control, but really controlled teen. Yeah. The one that with the cool parents that kind of let them, you know, let her do whatever she wants, but also she's not going to do anything bad anyway, so it's fine.
Right.
I don't know. Just
for
really me, got to me,
since it was on my list.
Yeah. What was it that you got into?
For me, part of what worked is I really liked her and her boyfriend.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
And you kind of know what's coming.
Mm. Yeah.
So there were scenes like when they were in the barn, I'm going, please let this scene end. I don't want this scene to keep going because what might happen? So you've got these incredibly sweet scenes with this intense level of tension going underneath, going, okay, no, not yet. All right. And when it finally is executed, it's like, wow.
Yep. Exactly. Like you have these kind of, you know that everyone is a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
Everyone. And you have no idea what's going to happen with any of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that, that feeling of just wanting to see them happy and then being forced to undergo strong moments of extreme unhappiness from different characters and then finding a silver lining it was hard. It's hard to pull that out of that movie, but I felt like they did. And I think that's why it affected me so strongly, is they actually brought me to the darkest possible place and then brought me back out. So,
yeah, I can see that. I never see that.
I like this movie a lot. Not as much as you guys. I thought the dialogue was just a little too clever.
Sure.
And I was telling Eric when I saw it that I was like, boy, this makes me feel old. This makes me feel like an old man, because I think that if I was like Vanessa in my 20s and female, then I would probably enjoy this a lot more. But just noticing how clever the dialogue was made me feel old.
And it does, speaks to a very different generation, for sure. Like the people who are going through high school right now do not know what it is to be a jock versus nerd.
Yeah.
You know, like that's gone. That world does not exist anymore. It's not a problem if, for the most part, it's not as big of a problem if you have gender fluidity. It's a whole different world. And they're surrounded by internet and phones and different lines of communication and different ideas.
Nerd culture is pop culture now.
Yep, right. It is.
Everybody's a nerd now.
Big Bang Theory is just a common show. It is their friends, you know?
Yeah, very nice. One of the things I liked about it, a common complaint for The Dark and the Wicked is no explanation for why all this horrible shit is happening. It's very broad explanation at the end, where it might be because the grandpa was bad guy, but we never get any, you know, he sold his soul or anything like that. That works so much better in kind of a romantic comedy situation where, you know, there's no explanation for why these kids are suddenly exploding. And we don't need to know. That's not what the story is about.
Exactly. Yeah. Which, I absolutely love that. Because any explanation is going to be bad. We're not going to like it. So why bother?
It's going to take away from what is important, which is the story of her and what she's going through.
Yeah, and I think the tension would have been destroyed if they'd brought it, like, when, like, the government had found what was wrong.
Yeah.
Too high a midichlorian count.
<That's right. laughs>
And they're like, we're not going to explain it to some teens. And since we're with a teen, it's like, you wouldn't get it anyway, so don't worry about it kind of thing. Yep. And that works for me.
Yeah, no, I like that one. So.
Yeah, what is...
This one's going to surprise you guys. I picked for my number one, Wolf of Snow Hollow.
Shocking. Completely shocking. I definitely had no idea this was going to be somewhere near the top of your list.
I knew it was going to be on your list, so when it hadn't showed up yet, I'm going, well, I know what number one is.
Yeah. A budget of $2 million, box office of $185,000. Rotten Tomatoes critics have it at 89%, and the audience has it at 72%. I know exactly why.
I'm going to shout out real quick. I can guarantee you this is probably going to be one of the next movies I watched. I purposely did not watch this because I knew you'd talk about it. And the way you described it, I'm going, God, this could fall into my top five pretty easily. So I'm just not going to watch
it. What a sacrifice. Thanks, brother.
I did watch it, but
Vanessa, I just ignore all that shitty said. shitty stuff I said about Eric earlier. And, it was written and directed by Jim Cummings, who wrote and directed Thunder Road. Did you guys see that movie? It won Sundance a couple years back. He plays a neurotic cop.
I know you're talking about. I haven't seen it, though.
It's fantastic. He got his start. So when you look on the IMDb page, they show like the films he's known for, such and such. So he's known for Wolf of Snow Hollow, Thunder Road, Captain America, The Winter Soldier. And I was like, what? I go on there. His first film, he was a PA.
Oh, that's glorious.
I love it. Yeah.
Wow. What a difference. Like, he shows up, PA's there, and then, okay, time to put my movie together. But I can't have any of that.
It also stars Jim Cummings and Ricky Lindholm, who was in Knives Out and a ton of other things, but is also Garfunkel in Garfunkel and Oates. And Robert Forster, who is a goddamn legend, 189 credits, including Jackie Brown, Vigilante, Alligator, and The Black Hole. This is Jaws with a werewolf in the snow.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Tara grips a small mountain town as bodies are discovered after each full moon. The sheriff is divorced. hates his wife, has a teenage daughter who he loves very much, but doesn't connect with very well in some very funny moments. And he's doing all of this stuff. Robert Forster is his ailing father and the police chief. And it appears they have a werewolf killing people. This is the movie I would expect if the Coen brothers announced they were going to make a werewolf movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It is shockingly gory. It's very, very talky. The lead is a neurotic mess, which is something that Jim Cummings seems to have a good handle on because he plays pretty much the same character in Thunder Road. And it's got some really ridiculous humor moments in it that made me laugh a few seconds after they had happened.
Oh.
Because I had to think about it. And so there was like dialogue that just raced by and then I was like, what did he just say? It's also surprisingly bittersweet because Forster plays the sick and ailing father and it kind of mirrors what was going on with his health in his last days. This was his last film.
Oh, wow.
Just to nail some of the funny stuff down, I took a couple of quotes that I liked from the dialogue.
Yeah.
This is the sheriff talking to his daughter. He says, I'm having a hard time with this thing, honey. It's nothing you have to worry about. I'm going to find the guy, obviously, but I'm just curious if you still have that pepper spray that I got you for communion? She says, I think so. You realize that was a weird gift to give somebody, right? He says, I do. It's okay. You'll never need it. But I want you to promise me that you're going to find it and keep it on you at all times. And then his dad talking to him when he says, you're going to have a hard time getting my generation off the stage. Willie Nelson's still doing concerts. And he says, yeah, I mean, to be fair, Dad, Willie Nelson is playing guitar and he's not doing a lot of heavy police work.
Yes.
And Robert Forster, when all of the stuff starts going on, he gets on his computer and the news reports are trying to contact him. And he's like, oh my God, what is this? 11 new emails on this thing this morning. Jesus Christ, this is worse than my birthday. So this is a werewolf movie in the same way that Jaws is a shark movie, which sure. is to say it is not a werewolf movie. Mm-hmm. It is a human movie. The characters are really, really well fleshed out. The relationships between just friends, between the ex-wife, between the daughter and his father, they all felt so believable. And then in the middle is slapped this werewolf story. And a lot of people are going to say, not a werewolf story. But when you see that werewolf the first time, you're like, fuck yes, this is a werewolf story. That is the coolest werewolf I've seen on screen. Very, very Dog Soldiers design on the werewolf.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I just loved it. I'm going to watch it again. Just talking about it made me love it that much more.
Like I said, it looked pretty damn good to me. So I'm going, oh, nope. Out there that I'm liking that.
Vanessa,
talk about more films.
You said you saw it, but I haven't heard you talk about it. So
yeah, you know,
you did not love it as much as I
did. I didn't love it as much as you did, but I do think that they did a lot of really cool shit. Like the town is super neat. I just didn't like the main character that much. So it was really hard for me to live in that world with him. But those lines that you mentioned, I remember that communion one very well. And just be like, oh my God, what? Like the daughter was really good in it. I like where the movie goes a lot.
Yeah, I won't say that his character is hard to like, but he's a complex individual, and there are parts and things that he does that you're like, why would you do that? But then that made me go, because some people do that sometimes.
Yeah,
nobody's great.
Not quite Roy Scheider.
I think that he owes a lot to his character, a lot of his character to Roy Scheider, though. Nice. And this script, I think, owes a lot to Jaws. I feel like he really wanted to kind of make that kind of movie.
Yeah. I do think that the story is super good. Super, super good story, for sure.
Should we just lightning round a few almost or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. Let's see what
I
else
I got one
saw.
That I thought for sure was going to be in my top five in February, but is not.
I think
Color Out of the Dark.
Oh,
of course.
Color Out of Space.
Out of Space.
Yeah, it's funny because I keep forgetting that was this year.
Yeah, technically it was this year.
I think that, I thought we counted it in our last year.
We did the same thing though. We mentioned it. It's like, but technically it's going to be a 2020 movie, so it shouldn't be on our list.
Oh,
okay.
Of course.
But then I looked at it going, if we hadn't seen it in 2019, it was just 2020, it would be on my, I really liked it, but it would not have been in my top five.
Sure.
Sure. Something that was so close to being my number five, it was unreal. Host, the Shutter film with a bunch of people hanging out on a chat doing a live seance that goes terribly wrong. It's just so well done.
I would say that is two thirds like done this in this podcast. I thought it was interesting too and a lot of fun. And it did that thing we talk somewhat with The Mandalorian about where it was like a 50-minute movie or something.
It was short.
Yeah.
It was very like, short. And
which was good.
Yeah. It was the length it needed to be, I felt like. And I just really liked what they did. I mean, it's a COVID film for sure. Like it was made during COVID and it lets you know that.
Yeah. I will say those guys were on top of shit, not only getting something out this quickly, but also tying it into Zoom, which is
so
something that
crazy.
Very few of us knew about at the beginning of this, and now everybody uses it.
Yeah, we all know it.
Anyone who had stock in Zoom, well done.
Well, you knew that Underwater was going to be on my list, and that got pushed back. Come to Daddy with Elijah Wood.
I heard so many good things about that.
I still want to see that one. Yeah. I remember you talking about it, but haven't seen it yet.
I love it. It starts out as a ghost story and ends up as something way weirder.
Got a VFW.
That's right.
That's on my list here too.
Yep, that would have been close, but no, but it's a lot of fun. It just didn't stick with me like some of the other ones did, but it's definitely well worth watching and a lot of fun.
Vast is the Night, the Amazon.
That is
picture.
On my list here, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the one
You saw that one. That was the one with the...
Radio thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Notable, I think, is that amazing camera shot that goes out the window and through the town.
Yeah.
Jeez, yeah. Such good camera work. And I love the dialogue. It's super snappy. The characters are really fun. Yeah. It reminds me a lot of Amy Sherman Palladino's work. But the ending wasn't my favorite, so that's what made it not. I felt like they ran out of ideas of what they wanted to do, which was unfortunate.
I like the ending because it's very Lovecraftian.
Yeah, that's fair.
Basically, it's like a sense of dread at the end instead of winding up anything or a happy ending or anything. We are nothing.
Yeah, basically.
This one, I think, on any normal year would have been very close to my number one, The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
That's on same.
Too. Yeah. It's incredibly well done, incredibly smart and interesting and technically sound.
Yeah. Big budget horror. This made me wonder if I think that our attention would be split along a lot of other movies that actually made it to the theater this year, not just horror, but, you know. I can't believe I didn't get my Fast and Furious film and, you know, shit like that. I think that the pandemic allowed for a lot of these smaller movies to release because these gigantic movies were holding back to see if they could somehow get a theatrical slot
like
again.
The Top Gun and the, isn't there a Mission Impossible movie or something?
Well, they're filming Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise is yelling at everybody.
That's right. Be healthy on set, apparently.
Another fun one idea there. Vampires versus the Bronx.
Oh, that was fun. Of course. I actually forgot about that one.
Yeah, that was I liked it, but it is kind of forgettable. Unless you were, I don't know, if you're 8 or 9, it's probably going to love it until you're 45 and watch it again and go, okay, it's fun.
I think it dropped on Halloween or something like that. It was a perfect little Halloween film.
Exactly.
So. Mine, another one that I really liked that I only saw recently, but was probably the number one box office for the U.S. or somewhere. I don't know. Tenet.
Never did see. I still haven't seen that one.
Yeah. I don't know why I haven't seen it. It's available to me now. And
is.
I'm like,
I thought, you know, I thought that was going to be the film that was going to be the first thing I'd see in cinemas when we were allowed back in. And obviously that just, everything took longer. I went ahead and checked it out and it's a really fun mental puzzle. That's what I like the most about it is, I wouldn't say it like blew me away. It's definitely not the best Chris Nolan film, but it's still a Chris Nolan film, and there's a lot going on in it, and it's very nice. Rewatchable. So I need to watch it another like two or three times, and I'm not even kidding, but like not in a painful way, in a, oh, my brain is very interested in this kind of way. So,
all right, I got to bite the bullet on that one. I don't know why I haven't.
I think a lot of people were extreme in their opinions of it either being very good or very bad. I really think that it has its issues for sure, but it's totally worth checking out.
I know kind of why, and it's a dumb reason. Nolan just kind of sticks in my craw a little bit. It's that he seemed to poo-poo anything that wasn't shot on film as being worth his time. It's like, no,
It's hard. I mean, like, he's definitely got a personality along those lines. He shows up on all of his sets in like a full suit and everything. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely
cool.
He's got his own thing going. That's never bothered me. But the thing that does also stick in my craw.
I don't know what that's from, but I know it's a saying.
It's very exciting. I like it. I got to figure out what it means. is his sound design is really troubling. The M&E just swallows dialogue. So I did actually watch Tenet with the subtitles on, and thank God I did.
Wow.
If I hadn't, I would not have. I mean, there were a lot of people who complained about this in the theater. They just could not hear what people were saying, and it's already a very difficult film to figure out what's going on. So without that dialogue, you're really, really screwed. But with the subtitles, you know, that worked for me just fine. But he definitely did that in Dunkirk, and I just wanted to murder him because the music and effects were so drowning out and destroying of that film for me. So that's that's my personal issue with him.
Is this a soundtrack that has the Hans Zimmer honking through?
It does have a fair amount of sound wall to wall, but it's not as irritating as the wasn't there like a website or like a button that somebody made, like a phone app that you could just press that whenever you wanted? Yeah.
I need that.
Yep. But I'll still see it. I just, because that's a petty, silly reason not to like a filmmaker. But
no, I mean, I think it's fair. And I've definitely had similar moments where I'm like, screw you, buddy. Like, I have a really hard time with Michael Bay because of set stories I've heard. And that's, you know, that's kind of maybe not fair. But, you know, I know that I like a lot of his films, but I just think he's a horrible human being.
Yeah.
So.
What about if I was making a feel-good top five, I would have dropped Scare Me in there.
I thought it was really neat and super well acted, but it wasn't like, it didn't blow me away.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah. It had a lot of good in there, but I think it, yeah.
I like my next cluster here of, sorry.
No.
Okay. four films, Leap of Faith, Possessor, The Hunt, and one we haven't mentioned, His House.
Oh, sure. Yeah. His House.
Which had problems, but I found the idea, because the number one complaint we always say about horror films is, haunted house movies, like, why don't you just leave the house?
Yeah.
Well, this one made that really difficult to just leave the house.
And he tries too. Mm. It's not like he does the thing that you want people to do in horror films of like fight against the issue and do the natural thing that you yourself would do.
Did you see this one?
I did not, but it has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Does it really?
Does it? Whoa.
Okay, I don't know if it's quite good, but...
Well, I have theories why.
It's got some really good, solid scares. It's got some CGI problems in those scares occasionally, but that tends to not bother me too much. But I know people have mentioned it, so I thought I would.
Yeah.
Acting is pretty solid. It's good. It doesn't fall like The Changeling or anything like that. But it's good. It's worth seeing.
A couple final ones on my list. Haunt. I don't know if either of you guys ended up seeing that. It's like a Shudder film where they go through a haunted house.
Yeah.
Like a fairground haunted house. Joe Bob did it as part of his...
Where it's got some weird security they go through.
Yeah.
And then they
leave their like cell phones and little baggies.
Yeah, I remember that. That one had a lot of break press when it came out. And then I watched and I thought, well, it's fun.
I thought it was fun. I thought it was a neat idea and very good for such a low budget film. I think it's a first film as well.
Nice.
Yeah. And really, I don't know. I walked away going, man, they did a great job. This is a hard topic to pull off. The fairground amusement attraction with the ensemble. And I liked a lot of what they did in there. So, that was great. And then Enola Holmes, I just have to give a shout out to. That was such a fun film.
I keep forgetting about that. I do want to watch that one.
You should definitely check it out. It's just, especially if you enjoy something like Sherlock, it's nice to kind of get a more rounded viewpoint of that universe. And I don't know, just a fun, fast, furious little film.
I got a couple of last ones. Eric, you got some more still?
Yeah, I got
still?
A couple I can do after that.
I really liked that film that you did not like, Vanessa, The Wretched, about the witch next door.
Oh, yeah. I didn't like
that one. Yeah, I like that one too. And I have Vivarium. On my
wow, I did not put Vivarium on.
I guess one's going to talk about I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Bottom of it. What's that?
I guess none of us are going to talk about I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
No.
Very
no,
divisive. But yeah, go on.
No, I just like that. It was kind of a mix between, it wasn't even a mix. It was basically Fright Night with a witch instead of a vampire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much.
I liked the witch. Looked cool.
That's true.
Cool looking.
The witch parts were better than the Fright Night parts.
Yeah, the Fright Night parts is the part I didn't like.
Sure. Let's see. So I'll shoot off here real quick. I did like Porno in the end. I thought that was fun.
I did too.
La Llorona, the Spanish one, not
I just saw that.
Not the
right. Not the Blumhouse version.
One, no.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I just watched that the other day. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Because it's not, it's like a horror film that is wedged up against like a kind of a crime drama.
Political thriller, crime drama kind of thing.
Yeah. So you think you're shoved in one film that's the main film, mm-hmm. and then you get like horror bashing its head against it.
Right.
And it's really well done, like a very well done film.
Yeah.
Huh. I actually avoided it based on that. Do I need to give it a chance?
I think you should give it a try. I mean, I don't know. You know his taste better than I do. Maybe I shouldn't recommend or not recommend.
Potentially. I think you'd know about 15 minutes in if it's going to work or not.
That sounds about right.
And a couple strange mentions here real quick. One called Uncle Peckerhead.
I've heard of this and have not seen it yet.
I've not heard of this.
It would have been a Crypticon film. But you know, we didn't do any features really. Well, we did one feature for the streaming stuff, but it was a band, nobody knows about kind of band touring in a van that somehow gets mixed up with a serial killer who becomes their roadie. They don't know what he does initially. And it's just a lot of fun. I was really surprised by how much fun that film was.
Is that streaming somewhere?
Yeah. It's on, pretty sure it's Amazon or Shudder.
I'll check that out.
And the 1BR, toss that out.
Yeah, I put that on my list too. I don't know if I can say I enjoyed it.
But it was well done.
But it was well done.
And my final mention for the year is the gore scene of the year in Hunter Hunter.
I've got that on my list here.
Hmm.
That is a creepy movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea who the lead actor was until I looked it up later on.
Right. Like, wasn't that Devin Sawa?
Sawa?
Yeah.
Somebody, really? Devin Sawa?
Yeah.
Somebody
I had a
very
crush on
recognizable,
him as a teenager.
Unrecognizable in that role, at least for me. Was.
Yeah. And especially at the end.
You know, there were a bunch of films I really wished that I had gotten to see and have not yet. And I don't know if you guys managed to fit any of these in, but they were on a lot of top lists, like Shirley.
I have not seen that.
St. Maude. I never got around to She Dies Tomorrow. You saw Sputnik.
She Dies Tomorrow's aggravating.
Oh, okay. Got it. And then Extraordinary, I desperately want to see. But Baccarat? No. Is a big one for a lot of people too.
Baccarat?
It's like an Australian, I don't even know. It's Australian horror film.
I've not heard of that.
It's like really top five for a lot of film reviewers.
I did love Extraordinary, but
which one was that again?
That's about the woman who is the
driver's training. I haven't seen.
Did I use it in one of my?
You did.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I really want to see that one, but it's still
it's very cute. Yeah. I would not put it on a best of horror list.
Yeah. Yeah, these are, I mean, I have so many 2020 films left to see. It's so funny. During 2020, I was like, I don't know what to watch, and I can't even think of what to order for my mom on disc on Netflix. And now I'm like, oh, God, I have so many movies to check out in a good way.
Yeah.
I'll finish then with The Vigil, which I thought was pretty decent. It's a Jewish horror film, and the premise is that I guess that there is a waiting period after a person dies, and somebody waits with the body to, you know, make sure they get to heaven, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And this kid is hired to do it, and it is a very scary night.
Ooh, that sounds super fun.
And then just a couple of series that I just fucking loved this year. Sweet Home is on Netflix, and it is a Korean series about a kid who moves into an apartment complex, and then what appears that the complex has gone to shit, but by episode three, you realize that the entire world has gone to shit, and there are just monsters everywhere. And it's kind of, it's almost got a zombie feel to it, not in the monster design, but in the fact that people can get infected they hide that from other residents and stuff like that. And then they turn into monsters. And I really enjoyed that one. Mm-hmm. But my big favorite was Alice in Borderland.
Yeah, I need to see that one.
Which is a mixture of Lost and Battle Royale.
Shit. Is that on Netflix? Or?
That is on Netflix. Yeah, I fucking loved it. And I don't want to forget that The Grudge had a series at the beginning of the year that I thought was
pretty good.
Pretty
Ju-on,
decent.
I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
the Ju-on
very
Grudge
good.
Story. Yeah. I saw one just yesterday called Hashtag Alive, which starts off really good. It's a Korean film. Mm-hmm. And then just becomes every other zombie
standard
movie you've ever seen. So that was really disappointing because that opening 20, until he finds the other person alive, it was like, this is really unique and interesting. And then they find each other and it becomes a zombie movie.
Yeah.
You know, there was just so much good TV this year. I mean, during lockdown, I just felt really blessed to have so many options.
Hashtag blessed.
Hashtag blessed. I mean, we all kind of checked out, of course, Mandalorian.
300,000 dead, Vanessa.
Oh my God. Well, no, I feel bad.
But I'm glad that you feel blessed.
Oh my God.
I could go so dark right now, but I'll be nice.
Oh my God. Watchmen was really good. Lest
was
we
that
forget.
This year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
holy shit.
It was. I know. This Is Not Okay. It's kind of slipped through the cracks, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a really fun
thing. That was the one
thing
I passed on until you smacked me in the face and said, watch this. And I loved it. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, it
remind
was
me
just
on
a
that one,
fun little girl who, it's kind of like Carrie.
Okay, yeah, that was really good. I did see that one.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Dev was this year.
Oh, I still have not watched.
Yeah. Oh, dang it. So good. Homecoming was fun to watch and also very weird and kind of Twilight Zone-y. Boys season 2.
Yeah, that was good.
Oh, how did I forget The Boys?
Yeah. Right?
So good.
And my personal favorite that has just made my whole world so much better, Lower Decks. Star Trek Lower Decks.
So good.
So good.
So ridiculous.
Probably my second favorite Star Trek series. Nothing can ever beat Next Gen. But no, it is so good. It's just like so lovingly well done.
It's obviously made by somebody who loves the hell out of it. I forgot. It's the guy from, is it?
Oh, Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just love Star Trek.
Yeah.
They know all about it. They have seen all of the series.
They know deep cut. There are deep cuts. There's in the one of the last episodes, there's a little flying robot thing. Yeah. And I was like, why does this look familiar? It's a prop that gets reused over and over and over again in Star Trek. If you ever look up like reused props.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh my God, that's such a deep cut. You guys.
It's like the car flip for Troma.
Oh my God. What about you guys? Were there any series that...
I didn't really write down any, and you just named a whole lot of them.
I know.
I mean, you know, Schitt's Creek was the one that, but that wasn't necessarily a 2020, that was a 2020 phenomenon.
It was a 2020 phenomenon for sure. I still haven't made it to that. Raised by Wolves.
Oh yeah, that was great.
Ooh, yeah, yeah. I will say that The Stand is going downhill very quickly.
Oh no. So. I was just about to start that.
I think I've watched all but the last 10 minutes of the third episode, and I'm, it's sort of like, we'll see where this goes.
I blame the non-linear storytelling, which is completely unnecessary, yes, and then ruins any kind of reveals that would happen in the story if you haven't read the story.
Right. Yep. Yeah. It's not done particularly well because it just switches scenes, and you got to now we're current. I mean, it doesn't take long to fill in, but at the same time, you got to send that second or two going, what? Oh, okay. Yeah, now we're back in the current. Oh, this is an old one.
Interesting.
Yeah, they should have just told the damn story.
I agree.
Huh, that's it.
They showed up in Boulder in like, what, episode two? I think I'm going.
Well, it starts in Boulder in episode one.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And the first scene is them clearing out bodies. And I was like, okay, I can handle this as a gimmick for the first episode, but yeah. I didn't realize it was going to run through the series.
Interesting. I was debating maybe trying to read the book and then the series.
I like how you were going to try to read the book.
I'm reading, realistic.
Your comprehension skills are...
It's just a big book.
It's a big book.
I mean, I made it through Game of Thrones, so I have faith, but... It's a big book. I mean, like...
It's a lot easier to follow than Game of Thrones. Once you hit... I read the Game of Thrones, the first three novels, three freaking times.
Whoa.
And the third time I got to the third one, every time, like, I'm done. Because it's so convoluted. There are so many characters.
And it only gets worse as you get in.
I don't care about these people. I'm just going to watch a show.
Yeah. When you get to the Onion Knight, that I had a moment of, do I want to carry on or am I done? And I carried on. I'm glad I did. I like the world, but...
His writing's great. Those first two novels are easily, obviously, rereadable, but man.
Yeah, so maybe that'll... So between On the Stand, we've got the current thing, the previous miniseries, and the book. How would you approach
two
this?
Books. Oh, the two original books. Publication, and there's, I don't know what they call it, the director's
it was project. It was a a slim 893-page volume when it first came out, and then they expanded it, all the stuff that he had cut out once he became... the master of horror, they put back in. So there is The Stand, complete and uncut, which has an extra character that had been cut and an ending that had been cut and all sorts of extra stuff.
All right. So where am I supposed to start with this?
I think that the original Stand sits fine on its own. Yeah. And I don't know how you are with like Audible or books on tape and that kind of stuff.
Depends on who's reading. That's
he's
kind of
got
my thing.
A really good reader, and that book on tape is excellent.
Okay.
So if I do
a lot of long drives,
right?
Stay to and from the podcast.
There
you go.
And I am getting a little tired of NPR. So.
Oh jeez.
I've listened to so much NPR.
It's impressive
this year.
That you lasted this long.
I know. It's mostly what. Oh god!
I just can't wait to see what they say next. I'm just on the edge of my toes.
It's been
so
a rough year. Who else will have died?
It's not so much the content is more. Hi, welcome to NPR.
Right.
We have a station here. We're gonna all break a little bit, and then we'll come right back, and we'll be talking about.
And but
we'll,
and Eric, they edit the fuck out of that show.
Calm it down just a little bit?
Right. Sorry. They edit that show so tightly that it's like it's okay for somebody
to take
a breath occasionally.
I will say though, if you listen to it late at night, they switch to this really adorable Canadian show where they talk about like Canadian issues, and they're like, this man wandered down the riverbank for a few days on a flotation device. Let's bring him in. Or this woman went, no joke, one of them was, this woman has a plant store called Mary Jane and has now got the wrong kind of business people coming in. How do you deal with this, you know, 80-year-old lady? Like, their stories are so good.
She
I just
came back
love
with,
it.
It's legal now, so I am making so much much more money.
Just switch it around. Yeah, no, there are these little gems in there. And if you happen to catch them, I mean, that's how I learned about things like The Moth and just little stuff in there that you're like, oh my God. And Radiolab, which I'm kind of obsessed with now.
Yeah, sure.
So.
Riveting stuff. All right. I feel like we have spoken for far too long.
We have.
Even still, we're like 20 minutes shy of the 100. Well,
tell us more about your NPR episodes.
I'm sorry, but I will say thank you guys so much for sticking with us through 2020, listeners. Yeah. There's a lot.
It was a weird for podcasting because a lot of podcast listening dropped off significantly, especially for the first couple months. But podcasts being created exploded.
Yeah.
We use Buzzsprout and they do a podcast where they talk about podcasting.
Oh boy.
At the beginning of the year, their YouTube channel had 5,000 listeners. Their YouTube channel now has over 50,000.
Wow.
It's like 10 times growth in 1 year. Yeah, there's a lot of new podcasts out there. So thank you for sticking with us and enjoying what we're doing.
Yeah, we understand you don't have an hour commute to work anymore because you don't have a job. But we really appreciate you at least continuing to hit that subscribe button, whether you're listening or not.
Yes. Thumbs up, subscribe. Thanks, five star with a horrible film for Eric to watch.
Yeah, it's been a while. Bring that on. Bring it on.
Absolutely.
A bunch of tunes.
And we had to do our pandemic episodes where there was a couple of times where either I felt sick or just we weren't going to be in the same room.
Zoom. Ah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. We even had our little twice weekly mini episodes. Yeah. Those were fun.
Yeah.
Totally different, you know, rolling with the punches. So. Yeah. I can't wait till you guys are vaccinated and I'm vaccinated and we can just hang out and not ever feel guilty about it.
I am not getting vaccinated.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Well, that's fine.
That chip in my arm.
That's right.
I'll just carry my phone. Screw the chip.
Am I the only one who's going to be vaccinated?
No.
Okay.
I imagine we'll all be forced to be vaccinated or we'll be labeled as enemies of the state.
Well, yes. Okay. That's fair. I don't even want to get into it, but I have one best friend who said, surprisingly, she'd get vaccinated. I was worried she'd say she wasn't. And the other one, even more surprisingly, who said she would not. And I was like,
anyways.
The thing I've heard is a lot of people saying it happened too quick. It was made too quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think having now listened to many NPR-sponsored podcasts about the science behind it and how it was done and the reason why it is so fast and the guy who is responsible for most of the inoculations that exist on planet Earth and why we're using his science to get where we're now at... I was like, okay, cool. I'm fine. Just give me it. And I'm allergic to everything. So if I'm going to get it and possibly die, then y'all, I can't even have eggs. Like, and what's in a vaccine? Eggs. So.
Well, you guys go ahead, get your vaccine. I have rights.
It's fine. If we're vaccinated, we're just two thirds. Does that get herd immunity? If you and I, Eric.
This is the lamest herd ever. The three of us in this room.
We're responsible for the greater good.
There you go.
Okay. Enough of that.
Okay. So, as usual, thank you to all the people who are liking, sharing us.
And, we have a topic.
Oh, shit. Whose is it?
Mine.
Oh.
Thank God.
Right? Thank God. Because I don't have anything set up.
For our next episode, it's my turn to pick a topic. We're back to normal topicing. Oh. And which I remembered about 2 hours ago.
Perfect. You've been stewing on it this whole time.
That's right. Well, I've got kind of a weird one. So we'll see how this plays. I want you guys to come up with a great movie that you really enjoy. Genre specific, of course. From a director you've never talked about on this podcast before.
I'm talking about shit.
No one's talked about John Carpenter yet. No one.
Yeah, except for the three people here.
Ad nauseum. Okay. All right. A genre film from it doesn't have to be a famous director. It could be just any film that we haven't had. That might this is challenging, yeah, though.
Something you like, though. It's got to be like a film you like. So it's theoretically something you already know about.
Oh, okay. Oof.
But you just haven't talked about anything by that particular director.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Huh. This is, this is going to be interesting. Okay. Hmm.
Can I talk about John Carpenter?
I mean.
I'm sure you've talked about him, too.
Shit.
Yeah, I think I might know one, which is exciting. Nice. So, yeah, awesome. Okay, well, I'm stoked. We get to go back to our normaling.
Me too. I already did my blah, blah, blah on the ending, so that's what everybody's homework is. Hey, by the way, anyone who's listening to this and can think of a good movie I should pick, go ahead and send me a text or something. Danny, Ron, I'm looking at you guys, Bob. And we will see you next week when we're talking...
Some damn director.
However that works, a director I haven't talked about already.
Yeah, it's got another title problem for you there. You're welcome.
In the shadow. In the shadow right now.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Our show is recorded somewhere high above Naval Station Everett at the nexus of all realities and is engineered and produced by Eric Margaret. Our theme music is Strange Eons Part 1 by the band Nightshade and is used with permission. Find Strange Eons Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, wherever fine